way you tell them.
Yes, sir. All right.
All right, so we're going to this table.
There you go, Drew.
Ooh, Shirley Stivers, I'm a Cowboy fan.
All right.
Oh, go Cowboy. I see, number one fan.
Oh, well. Hi, Cowboy Fox, Nebraska, Cowboy.
Sorry, yeah. Go Cowboy.
There you go, sir. My name is Earl Miller from Washington, D.C., and would you like me to sing Hail to the Redskins for you? Hail to the Redskins, even to this day.
Nonetta Garner from West Virginia, and I don't really follow professional sports that much, but I do follow on West Virginia Mountaineers.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, my parents are from Morgantown.
Really?
Yeah, yes, they are. Yes, sure. You are. Are you living in Morgantown?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's too many hills.
Hey,
oh, yes, it is. Yeah, yeah, okay, here you go.
Okay, I'm...
Keep coming, Dad.
I'm Pat Canty, and I'm a longtime Cowboy fan.
Yeah.
So, who was your favorite player back then? your longtime experience.
I think there was some Dixon Edwards.
The greatest Cowboy of all.
Troy
Aikman. Jay Novacek.
There you go.
My name is Andrew Burnett. I'm from Dallas, Texas here, and I root for Cowboys and Rangers.
There you go.
Okay. I'm Adelie Lucas. I'm from New Jersey, and I'm for the Phillies.
Yay!
And for the Eagles, but my grandsons both went to Philadelphia school, so I'll go with Philly U and Penn.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Andrew, could you raise your hand?
There you go.
Right here.
I'm Tom Berginger from Pittsburgh, so I guess I'm a Steeler fan.
You're my daughter. There you go.
Teresa Curry, Gonzales, Louisiana, LSU football and baseball Tigers, New Orleans Saints, and New York Mets.
Wow.
The Mets country.
Yeah, you got another one.
That's okay.
There you go. I wasn't going to wear my jersey today.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Rick Toretto. I'm from Boynton Beach, Florida, but I'm actually originally from Jersey, and I'm a Mets fan, and I'm a Giants fan.
Sorry about that.
Oh, all right, I'm in the NFC East.
That's
right.
Except for the
Bears. I'm Bob Lucas, and as you can see, I root for the Phillies in the National League, Yankees in the American League.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Football, I'm originally from the West Coast, so I root for the 49ers.
Yeah.
I also root for the Eagles, who are known for their congenial hospitality for the Dallas Cowboys. What's that? Perhaps not. Perhaps not. And college, and pro basketball, again, I'm from the West Coast. Bill Russell, I root for the Celtics still.
Did you have a question? Excuse me.
They called in the
Ravens.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. All right.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah,
man.
You? Yeah, I'm doing just fine.
We are actually just, we are Michigan people,
and so we are probably better known for the Detroit Lions that were 0-16. And for our Detroit Tigers, and now we live in Washington, the state of, and so I'm a Mariner fan.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
I'm Casey Dutton, Shoreline, Washington. I live for the Tigers and Mariners in baseball. And I'm an NFL fan of most every team. Of course, I root for the Lions, and I followed the Cowboys when I was young. But I really get excited about the Cowboys because I love Brad Sham, Christy Scales, and Dave Loppenberg. And Christy is the best sideline reporter in the NFL on radio.
Yeah. 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 There you go.
That's good for his wife.
Hello there. This is Donna Pomerantz, and I'm from Southern California. And I root for any team that makes Mitch happy, because if he's sitting in his man chair with a nice bottle of beer and his team is winning whatever it is, then it's good for me.
Mitch Pomerantz, Pasadena, California. Los Angeles Dodgers forever. I'm a proud alum of the University of Southern California, so I'm a Trojan through and through. And since I play fantasy football, I root for any team who has my starting quarterback, except next year when the Rams come from their exile in St. Louis. I will once again be an LA Rams fan.
Pasadena, Rose Bowl, right?
That's right,
Rose Bowl. Yeah, we played Michigan State, we played USC, and yeah, back in 89.
What's
the
one, though, right?
Oh, I don't want to spoil it, but... Yeah, I put it like this, I have a Rose Bowl ring. Roddy P was the quarterback. Yeah, Roddy P. Yeah. Yeah, I had a great time. Yeah, it was a great time. Yes, it is. Here you go.
I'm from Minnesota, and this mic isn't working. And I obviously root for the Twins. I don't care really about the other sports.
Okay, we're glad for Southern California. Currently, and Dodgers and the USC Trojans, because I'm in all this as well. And I root for anybody practically who plays the Yankees.
Yeah, boy. I'm a Yankee fan, huh?
Yeah.
Hello, ACB sports fans. This is Rex Ransom from the highest hill in El Segundo. I like the LA Dodgers, and back when, I like the Raiders, the El Segundo Raiders, when they were stationed at El Segundo. Thank you.
Well, my good friend Joe King, he used to play for the Raiders.
Really?
Yeah. He's a country western singer.
Oh. He practiced right down the street from me.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, right around the corner.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Hillary Green. I'm from Provo, Utah. I'm a Utah Jazz fan and a Boston Celtics fan.
All right.
My name is Chris Green. I'm from Ogden, Utah. I like the Dodgers because Tommy Lasorda was a manager of a farm back about in the 60s. And I like the Utah Jazz. Probably my favorite NFL team is the New England Inflator Gators. Pretty much my game. I just really enjoy it.
My name is Mike Moran, and I really have always loved the Dodgers and Vince Scully, of course. And even though I'm from New Jersey and sometimes in Florida, I root for Green Bay a lot. And I do have to like the Giants over the Jets. A good friend of mine, for you Detroit Tiger fans, plays center field for the Tigers, Anthony Gose.
Yes.
So, We're hoping to get his batting average up a little higher than it is now. But anyway, so that's my story, and I was looking to it. So Green Bay, I would say Brett Favre was my favorite quarterback to play with. Yes, Brett Favre. I did it with Steve Young, 49ers. Here we go.
I love Brett.
And
his jersey.
Yeah.
Yes.
Richard Johnson, Gainesville, Wisconsin. Brewers and the Cubs are kind of even. And football of Packers, although I just thought Carver's a gunman. I like the current Rodgers much better.
Oh, okay.
I'm Bob Acosta. I'm from Chatsworth, California. I'm a Cub fan, and someday, God, we're going to win. The Dodgers, the Angels. I'm still a Laker fan, and did LaMarcus sign with Dallas? We lost everybody. I'm a USC man all the way, but Dixon Edwards is my favorite player.
Denise Weddle from Los Angeles, California. Yes. And anyone who's playing against USC.
Yeah!
Lakers, Dodgers, and the Kings hockey. We're going to get it.
I'm Donna Browning. I'm from Alexandria, Virginia. I'm a Washington Redskins fan. And the Rams. I like the Rams also. When they were on the West Coast, I used to have the East Coast, West Coast. They moved on. But let's hope they're moving back so I can, you know. And I love hockey, so of course I'm a Washington Caps fan. And baseball, I like the Yankees.
Yeah.
Oh,
nice. Yeah. Wow, that's a job. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Ace Kids. We found each other. The two people in the room who like the Redskins. Oh, good. And I used to be a Cubs fan a million years ago until the Mets beat them out in 69 when I said hello. So I guess I'm a Mets fan. I'm from D.C. And I'm a fan of anybody who has ever or will ever do a triathlon.
My name is Michael Alvarez. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I am one of the few soccer fans in this room. Viva Athletic Bilbao. And also, I am probably the only fan in the U.S. of cricket.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Holloway, and I live in Alameda, California, so I'm an Oakland Athletics fan, and I like the Giants when I don't play my A's, and I'm a big fan of the Sharks fan. I love hockey. I'm a big avid hockey fan. And being from Kentucky, I like Kentucky Wildcats.
Okay. With onions?
I'd love to this thing. Hi, my name is Chris Devon. I'm from Quincy, Massachusetts, just south of Boston, so I'm a Boston sports fan. And that means Patriots. Remember two things. When the balls were changed in that championship game, it was 10-7 Patriots. When the game ended, it was 45-7. How important were those balls? Not at all. 35-0 with the regular balls. And also, Tom Brady's suspension, I think that Goodell and Kraft agreed. I think it's going to be reduced to 2 games. That's my prediction. You're not going to take him away from him? In high school, they would take the chef shit away.
That's right.
Ken...
Okay, Ken Maddox, Jackson, Mississippi. And my sports affiliates are all over. I am a New Orleans Saints fan forever. Will be. Hate the Cowboys. I'm a Los Angeles Dodger fan, so I go all the way out to the west, and then I'm a Boston Celtic fan.
So you talked about people hating the Cowboys, right? So as you get older and you leave the sport, you start to become friends with some of the guys you used to play against, right? And then I found out, you know, as time went on, and I talked to the guys, and the reason why they hated the Cowboys is because they always wanted to be Cowboys.
I'm Mary Orester. I'm from Newark, Delaware. I am a Pittsburgh Pirate fan, a Pittsburgh Steelers fan who hates the Cowboys. I'm also a Penguin fan for hockey. I follow the Lakers. I'm eating. So I'm a sports fan from all over, and I love the Michigan Wolverines.
No, Michigan State, huh? From Michigan. Yeah, from Michigan. Michigan State? Okay, all right, here we go.
Hi, I'm Carol McGee, and I am a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. I have my shirt on today. And I'm not that crazy about, I can be a Steelers fan when it's convenient. And it depends on who they play. And other than that, just listen to sports at random. I don't have any favorites or whatever.
Yeah, I was as a kid, I was a Pittsburgh Pirates fan when they had the funny hat. Remember they used to have the funny hat? Whatever, yeah, so, yeah.
My name is Suzanne Howell. I'm from Claymont, Delaware. And I'm a Phillies fan. I love the 76ers. And I love March Madness. I love to listen to those games.
Karen Campbell, Chicago Cubs fan for baseball, Green Bay Packers for football.
Hello, I'm Donna Brown from West Virginia. Not originally West Virginia, originally from the Philadelphia area, so I still follow the Philadelphia professional teams.
Yeah, my father played in for Marshall in West Virginia. So, yeah.
I'm Fran Simon from Philadelphia, and I say, go Eagles, go!
Live sign for Philadelphia. E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles!
Thank you. I'm Marcia Farah from Somerville, Georgia. Go Braves! And also for the Texas Rangers, because our Vice President Fred McDade played for the Texas Rangers until he was blinded in Vietnam.
So I guess, is that everybody, or do you have any late come? Oh, here we go. Here we go.
My name is Jesse Holloway from Alameda, California. My name is Stokeland. My wife and I wearing our NBA champion Golden State Warriors shirts. Congratulations to the Dub Nation. Also big fans of the Oakland Athletics, Oakland Raiders, and San Jose Sharks.
So did I make sure I got everyone in the room introduced? Number one cowboy. And I think I got one more introduction. This is Jeff.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Jeff Bishop. I'm here recording for ACB Radio. I'm an Arizona Wildcat fan, you know, and Cardinals. So.
Yeah, I got you. There you go. You're welcome.
Thank you. I'm just going to say a few things before I do my teams. First, I want to thank everyone for coming. Second, I want to thank Dan Spoon for sort of pinch hitting for me. I'm going to be taking off to take care of some things, so I'm not going to stick around. But this is a great event. The third thing I want to say, because go ahead and eat, because it's, you know, if you're not, go ahead and eat. But the third thing I want to say is this luncheon is really a memorial to the late Charlie Hodge, who, you know, worked every year tirelessly putting on. Knows more about all of our teams than we all did. So other than that, but again, I really want to thank Dan for helping to help put this on and to help me and to sort of pinch hit. And I also want to, you're going to really like our other speaker, Drew Burnett, who's out there. And so let's hear it for him. You'll hear him a little later. I get my teams, and I did get to see, I'm a Stanford Cardinal guy, and I did get to see Michigan State beat us in the Rose Bowl, but we did beat Wisconsin. I got to see that, so I love all the Bay Area teams. I'm from Sacramento, and I like the A's whenever they're not playing the Giants, and we know how many world championships the Giants have won recently. And I do have, and I go back to the Warriors of the 60s, so you know how happy I was this year. And finally, I will tell my brief, I'm one of those weird guys who roots both for the Raiders and the 49ers, and I will tell my brief 49ers story. When my daughter, my older daughter, was 9, she decided she was going to root for two things, Jerry Rice, which I liked, and the Cowboys, which I did not. So I told her, and my father both told her, she had been written out of our wills. All right, thank you very much. Enjoy your food for a minute, and we'll bring Dixon on to talk with you all and to answer your questions.
Thank you.
Everybody just enjoy a few bites of food, and once we finish the meal, we'll get back with Drew and get some.
Okay, Chris is going to talk to us for a few minutes about his experiences playing beat baseball and also starting a league for children with beat baseball. So, Drew, if you could come up.
Drew Bennett is coming up now.
Everybody give Drew a big round of applause.
Do you know Sherwin Washington?
Yes, yes.
I do.
Yep.
Know him well.
Drew put him out many a times.
Very good, I'll tell him.
He's hit some pretty big heaters. Yoik.
Okay, we're going to swing. Excuse us.
Now we're okay. Nice. We're okay.
Bless you, Jonas. I'm 29 years old, and I've been blind for about 6 years now. Played sports all my life, and asked to kind of share those experiences with y'all. I'm a little bit different of a sports fan. I definitely love watching Cowboys and my Rangers, but don't really follow all the stuff, all the stats and stuff. Really, I'm more like I like to get out and do stuff myself. Probably the three sports that hold closest and dearest to my heart. Actually, really four, but two are real similar. Stand-up paddleboarding. Love that. Wrestling and judo, and beat baseball. growing up in high school, I was the captain of my wrestling team. Was ranked 5th in state my senior year. Then ended up going blind a couple years after I graduated due to diabetic retinopathy. And I was like, okay, now what's up? Before I even knew that there was anything out there like an orientation mobility instructor or like a VR trainer, you know, anything like that, went out, started trying to teach myself how to get around with a cane, and actually was going around with an ID cane, so that didn't work out too well since I couldn't see Jack. but my high school was... had a position open for an assistant wrestling coach. And so I got to go out and basically learn how to be blind while coaching wrestling.
Wow.
And I definitely think that due to that, my transition into learning how to be blind went a lot smoother. Just due to all the body awareness, all that kinesthetic sense, the proprioceptive senses that you feel going back and forth. Got the competitive bug again, and since I was already too far into college, couldn't go look at wrestling in college, since they got restrictions on that and all. So found out about judo. Got into judo, which for those of y'all who don't know, the easiest way to describe judo is basically like Greco-Roman wrestling in a judo gi. So you actually get to grab the person instead of having to body lock them. I've been doing that for a couple years now. Hopefully I can make it to the 2016 down in Rio there in my weight class. We'll see. So. That's what I do most of the year. And then like I said, stand-up paddleboarding. I've gotten into that in the past 2 years. That one's kind of an interesting one for me. It gives me a good body workout, and it's kind of almost a spiritual cleansing whenever I get to go out there on the water and just work everything out. And I'm also an orientation mobility instructor, so that adds a whole other aspect to it. I'm hoping to someday. I'm working on my adaptive PE degree right now, and I'm hoping that eventually I could start up some camps for kids and teach them how to go out and orient themselves so they can do like unusual sports like stand-up paddleboarding and stuff that they may have really only had an intellectual idea of before instead of an actual practical one. I guess the last one that's really dear to my heart is beatball. Aside from everything else, that sport itself was probably my big saving grace with when I went blind. Not necessarily for myself, but as I'm sure many of y'all have experienced before that are blind and DI, sometimes the hardest part is getting the family on board with it and getting them to realize, you know, being blind doesn't really necessarily have to limit you like they think it does.
Definitely not.
And I'll tell you what, it was the hardest time ever getting my family to realize that. It took them a good, honestly, it took me about 7 months to find out about beatball. Went to the World Series, and my family went up to Rochester, Minnesota with me back in 2010. And that was the first time ever that they finally got it. And it was because I saw all the people that were associated with beatball and getting around. And to me, that was the coolest thing ever. Other thing I really loved about beatball is, you know, being blind and VI, we're often taught to be cautious as we're moving around. You know, use your cane, make sure you don't stumble into things, knock stuff over. Well, beatball, you don't gotta worry about that. You just let loose. And it was pretty awesome after I'd gone blind to have that feeling of just being able to cut loose out on that open field again. I've been playing that ever since. I made the defensive all-star team last year. Made set a record for the most put outs in a game ever. I'm actually right after the luncheon here. Haven't even checked into the hotel yet. I had my gear and stuff getting ready to go to practice. Going to hop in the Uber and jump on over to Irvine. And I will say that if any of y'all have any free time, don't have any events y'all are planning on going to after this, feel free to come up and say hello, and you come on out. You're more than welcome to come see what it's like to hit that ball out of nowhere. I guess that's pretty much sports for me. It's been something in my life that's allowed me to discover me not only physically but mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and God bless sports.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Drew. We've got time for two questions. Is there anybody that has a question for Drew?
Yes.
Okay, I may need a volunteer to help run the mic.
I'm right here. I'm right behind you.
Okay.
Excited.
Okay, there. Thank you.
Here you are, sir. Oral.
Question for you. In view of your involvement with wrestling and judo, mm-hmm. how much connection have you had with the U.S. Blind Athletes Association?
I've had some. I know Scott and Heidi Moore. I've met them through that. But typically I only come across people whenever we're at competitions. I monitor the website to know when there's actual VI-specific tournaments. But for the most part, I just follow USA Judo and just go to random stuff from that. One of the things I love about it is that, it's not limited to just blind athletes. You go out there and you're competing against everyone.
So.
Another more questions?
I was just wondering, where are you from?
Oh, wait for the mic. Here we go.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I'll come to you. We're recording this for ACB Radio, so for. Okay, go ahead. I've got the mic. Go ahead.
Hello, sir. I'm thankful to have you. And I was just wondering if you could tell me what state are you from?
I'm from Texas. The promised land.
We were all wondering.
I never hear it myself, but I've been told I kind of have an accent. So.
All right. Where, right here. Here you go.
All right. Let's have a big round of applause. Thanks to Drew.
Taking him back to a seat. Now.
Yes, sure.
Dixon,
you
want to
be behind the
mic? Oh, we'll
get somebody to run the mic?
You can do the whole thing?
Oh, ambitious.
Okay. All right, now I am very honored to introduce to you all Dixon Edwards, who was so kind to come join us today. And he has done this strictly as a volunteer. And so first of all, I just want to give him a wonderful round of applause. Just to give you a little bit of background on Dixon, Dixon played for Michigan State,
yay!
The Spartans, from 1988 to 1991. He played on the Spartans Rose Bowl Championship team in 1989, beat the USC Trojans. I also have to tell you, for any Michigan fans out there, that Dixon's team, the Spartans, beat the number one ranked Michigan Wolverines, and Dixon had 16 tackles in the game. Dixon was drafted in the second round by the Dallas Cowboys, 1991, where he worked his way up from the special teams and became the starting strong linebacker for the championship Dallas Cowboys and participated on 3 Super Bowl winning teams. Folks from the Minnesota area. He then became a free agent, signed with the Minnesota Vikings, where in his best year he had over 130 tackles for the Minnesota Vikings. So, without further ado, I want to introduce to you Dixon Edwards, and he just wants to go around and get to know us. And so, what he's going to do, raise your hand, he'll come with the mic. Ask your question, and then he'll answer it, okay?
Wow.
So it's going to be an interactive presentation. We want you guys to ask questions. I get to ask the first question. So, Dixon.
Yes.
8 years in the NFL, a lot of tough, hard times.
Yes.
Who and where and what stadium was the roughest stadium for you to play in as a Cowboy?
Oh, wow.
I think it would be Washington. They were the best team. It's a lot of passion in the rivalry between the Cowboys and I guess the Redskins and anybody in the NFC East though. But I would have to say Washington. And then you know how they make a special name for tackling a quarterback, and what is that called?
Sack.
So that's like a special thing. Whenever I would just tackle a Redskin, it felt like a sack to me. Anybody that has the ball, just a Redskin. It was like, it felt good. Yeah, that's what you get. Anyway, so I would have to say the Redskins, they were the most, that would be one of the toughest teams that we would play on a consistent basis and go into their stadium. But it's so funny though is that like I was saying, a lot of teams didn't or guys from other teams that didn't like us as Dallas Cowboys because they wanted to be Cowboys. The reason why they played us is because they wanted to be Cowboys, but they always came and they played us their best. And so imagine you were as a Cowboy, you had to play every week, and then you had to play your best game because everybody was trying to knock you off. It was a lot of teams that you would not think were that good or had that good of a record. It would play us really, really tough. So as a Cowboy, that was one of the toughest things that you would have in playing anybody in any team week in, week out. So I guess I'm going to walk over to the room.
The Yankees have been struggling with
that. All right, so please raise your hand if you would like to ask this Dixon a question, and he'll come around with the mic.
I got Philadelphia here.
No, L.A.
Awesome.
I'm a Trojan, Dixon. I think I know your answer, and maybe it's a function of getting older, but the rules protecting quarterbacks, protecting wide receivers, it's becoming Arena League football. I'm wondering if you're concerned about the trend of stifling defenses in the NFL.
Yeah. I was
going to
add that.
Yeah, I think the advancement in equipment to protect the guys and everything is actually bad for the game. I think pain is in place for a reason. it is to tell you not to do something. And if you put more pads on it, you're going to get a false sense of security and think that you can go out there and do something if you're a super person. So I would think that they would need to go back to the old leather helmets. Give us less equipment. Give the guys less equipment. Give them less equipment, then they would be more cautious on their technique and being able to tackle someone that's coming at you at 30 miles an hour. Your shoulder. Yeah, you use your shoulder. You won't use your face. And a lot of the techniques that they taught us when we were younger, these guys would actually go and do that. So you just imagine if you're a receiver and you're coming across the middle maybe the sports guy from Dallas can explain what is across the middle.
Yeah.
When a receiver's coming across the middle?
Who
knows who this receiver coming across the middle with?
Dan?
So anybody that was coming across the middle, you know, in the defense, that is a very risky place to be, and you protect yourself, and there's a very few brave people that would venture across the middle if a linebacker is there checking them, you know, or could potentially hit them. I mean, like, we were just talking about the gentleman Jeff that just left. He was saying, who were some of my favorite receivers? I would say Michael Irvin, because he was brave enough to go across the middle like that. Jerry Rice. You know, those guys knew it exactly. And the thing is, in going across the middle, it's a lot of preparing yourself for that kind of position. So you have to understand where guys are going to be and not be, and now with them giving these, you know, like you were saying, softening up the sport, it gives them a false sense of security to go across there. So what if some guy is a crazy nut guy out there on that football field? There ain't none of those out there, right? And you go across the middle, and the next thing is this dude just actually decides that he's going to slam you. He doesn't care about his $20,000 fine or anything like that. You know? Yeah, you got millions of it, you know. So I don't think, when you're saying with the rules, I think it's a bad thing for the game to be able to give so much protection and all these other things. I know what they used to do every year. They always, the fans like scoring. Everybody likes scoring. Thing is that these guys are becoming faster, and the techniques and everything, that the defensive guys are so good, they can't score. That's why the scores are not that high, is because these dudes are very, very athletic dudes, and they're smart. You know, they understand how to work together as once in the, as one, and the coordinators are understanding that too with the players. So now no one can score. In order for them to be able to score, they will always change the rules to make the defensive guys not as aggressive or to allow them to score. And that's what it seemed like they were doing every year. So I talked long on the first question. Here we go.
Go back to rugby, right?
This is a team question. Jimmy Johnson was your coach when you first came on there.
Yes.
And you won with him. Then came Barry Switzer, and Barry Switzer is a totally different kind of person. And I wondered, how did that affect the team? You still won with Barry Switzer, but do you think if you would have had someone like Jimmy Johnson, you would have even won more Super Bowls?
Wow. Okay, so.
All right, so I think if Coach Johnson was there, because he's very strategic, he understands matchups, he would understand the matchups between players week by week. It almost gave him, you would think he was the guy named Notre Dame. You would think, you just imagine, after you won a game, we would win a game all the time, and then he would come. Somebody got it. So after the game, Coach Johnson would call the team up in the locker room, and they always give a speech. He would give us a speech right after the opponent that we just won to explain to us what we're facing the next week. And then by Wednesday, we would have our first team meeting. Wow. And then he would tell us on Wednesday the outcome of the game on Sunday at our team meeting. It's amazing. And you just think about how much confidence that builds in your leader when he sits there and tells you how things are going to win, who the person is that's going to win the game for us, and it actually comes out that way. And the reason why is because he understood matchups, and he understood I would have to say Coach Switzer, inherited a great well-oiled machine that Coach Johnson created. But you know, I'm not saying that Coach Switzer brought to the team was bad. It was great, because Coach Switzer gave us something that we needed, and that was a rest. I mean, we were so beat up. I mean, Coach Johnson had that beat you up philosophy, we were out there. I mean, I always tell everybody, you can go ask Larry Brown, any one of these dudes, the practice was like at 120%. So could you imagine, yeah, that's how you got, what I'm saying? So by the game was like the dessert. We get to play a game, and practice was so hard. You just think about it. So when you in the professional level, you play the one offense against the two defense, but in Dallas, the ones practiced against the ones. And you just think about it. This is what the great thing about it, is that it would give us a lot of work. Yeah. People that are not necessarily gifted athletes as people have to work hard to be able to achieve the levels that we were. So, you have to work hard to get to that level. And I always, Michael Irvin is the number one person of that. And so, somebody please remind me to tell you my Michael Irvin story. Because I'm going to forget the other question. I'm in my second year, and I forget something in my locker in Valley Ranch. I don't know if any of you ever had the tour of Valley Ranch. The training room looks out to the practice field, right? So when I was going to get something out of my locker, it was on a Sunday at 3:00 in the afternoon. All right, so in July, about 2 weeks before camp, so it's a little warm, right? Yeah, so, but to gather this, it's on Sunday. So I walk past the training room, and I look out on the field, and it looks like somebody's working out full speed. Somebody's out there working. I think they're trying out a guy, like they're bringing somebody in. I go out there and go past the window. It's Michael Irvin out there, right? But the thing is that Michael Irvin is running routes by himself, and no one's throwing him the ball. what I'm saying? Could you imagine the dedication? And this is the other thing that, you take all this stuff. We never work out in the off season with our equipment on. We never ever do that. But this dude is over there in July, 2 weeks before the camp, it's like 100 degrees out there, running routes by himself, and nobody's throwing the ball to him. Then this, he has his equipment on. He has full equipment, that big old mouthpiece they used to wear and all this other stuff, throwing the ball as if Troy Aikman is throwing him the ball. So me as a player, I'm sitting there thinking like, I'm not there, I don't have that type of dedication to my craft. And people don't realize that it is a craft. It is a certain skill, just like anybody else that does anything else in life and whatever they decide to do. This
Michael
is a craft.
Irvin was high. He just thought people was cool.
did you get that on tape over there? and then the thing is one of the concerns that a lot of us guys as former players of the Cowboy, because I am a Cowboy, it's a little different. I am, and then you see the things that your family is not doing correctly, it kind of hurts you, you get a little disappointed. And someone was just talking about Troy Aikman and how he's a little biased against the Cowboys whenever he's announcing against them, because that's his family. He knows what they're not doing, and you see it all the time anyway. But hold on a second, where was I at? That's what I'm saying. That's the reason why we were very good, is because of people like Michael Irvin and their commitments to it, to the craft. And then, like, when we were saying stuff about, I was about to mention Tony Romo. So, Tony Romo has the makeup of a great quarterback. He has everything you can think of. The thing is that now he has to be able to get the timing. And the only way that he can get the timing is working, hard with the receivers. He has to work hard with his receivers. So if you think about the commitment that on the end of Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin's relationship, and Michael doing what he has to do and being able to get himself open, Troy has to be able to time him in what he's going to be doing, right? So I'm, like I just told you before, I was a number one, I was a starter, but I was practicing against Michael Irvin in practice. Because, I mean, how many dudes am I going to face that are going to be that good? So anyway, so, but just think about it. So Troy would throw the ball before Michael even turned around for it.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
I mean, if he knew exactly where it was going to be. Now, if you take it a step further than that, if Troy has to be such a master of his craft to understand that when he walks up to the line, be able to identify the defense that these guys are in and be able to throw it to the person that he thinks is going to be open, and they have to be there at that point. Think about how deep that is, and you got four guys that you could potentially have that responsibility.
Wow.
He already knows it. You know, he already knows where he's going to throw, because the guys, like what I was telling you earlier, is that the guys are so athletic on defensive side of the ball that by the time the guy's looking back for the ball, it's too late and they're going to intercept it. And that was some of the concerns we had earlier with Tony Romo. So Barry Switzer or Jimmy Johnson? I would have to say Coach Johnson, because he did what it had to do to be able to make it win. And a lot of people, some people are about money, and there is a certain group of people that are about winning. They just want to be the best at whatever the heck they do, and they don't care what they get compensated for. And the money that they do get paid is basically the only reward that people can see as of their efforts in their craft. So
winning is its own reward.
We got to get it on the mic.
Winning is its own reward.
Yes, it is. Yeah, because I mean, like I said, one of the main reasons why I'm standing here is because I was on three successful teams and I worked very hard to get there. All right, hold on a second, right here.
Wait.
Here we go, right here.
Okay. You got to go hold the mic.
So, what was it like to play against Barry Sanders when you would, you thought you had him and then you didn't?
That's the way he explained it. It's true. So I don't know if many of you know a guy named Jack Del Rio.
Yeah, a Trojan.
So he's the head coach of the Raiders. So Jack was he wasn't really, really super athletic dude. You know, he was strong, but he wasn't really, really fast. He was super, super smart. So what Jack would do is, Jack would be in there before the coaches were watching film, and he would be there after the coaches were watching film. So Jack Del Rio, one day, the week we had to play the Lions, Jack called in Dave Wanstead. He called Dave Wanstead, which is the defensive coordinator. Jack called him in and said, "I figured out how to beat Barry Sanders." So you imagine a player saying to a defensive coordinator, "I figured out how to beat Barry Sanders," right? So what he figured out in watching film, and he wrote down, like when you're watching film, it's timed, you know, like 20 seconds, 30 seconds, or whatever. Jack was writing down the instances within, you know, when he juked everybody and when he did not. So Jack figured out is that if you attack him and take away that option for him, then he has only one other option, you know, or the other option is there. So if people start to take away this option, this option, this option, there are a few options left. So that's how we were able to corral him. And Jack Del Rio was the person that figured out, you know, and that week, Dave Wanstead said, you know, there is no missed tackles this week. Take Jack Del Rio's suggestion and take away this option for Barry Sanders. If you miss the tackle, it's okay, because somebody else is going to rally and take and get that other the other spot for him. So yeah, like I said,
wasn't it that same play where Barry Sanders ran, and is either Jack Del Rio or Jeff Cole? They thought they had him, and he went to go grab him, and he wasn't there. And I think I remember him saying,
They said, Emmitt Smith said, you made him look like a fool.
So I don't know if that was the, it might have been a game before that next game. I'm just saying that, you know, that next game, we corralled him, and the hard part about it is, remember we were talking about technique and safety and all that kind of stuff. As a child, you're taught in playing the sport, this is how you're supposed to be. You're supposed to break down, bull your neck, and do all these different things. If you have to take away all that training that somebody taught you how to do and ignore it and go after somebody without any technique. You know, so it was a tough week to be able to just train yourself to be able to just do something totally different in 1 week. But we were able to stop him.
You know what I'm saying? Because they beat us really bad my rookie year. Yeah, it was like 38 to 12 or something like that. And I mean, it's like everybody on the team was scoring, and then they got that lion deal, you know, whenever they score.
That was
1991.
That was an upset.
Yeah. Okay. Another question. Among the runners, who were three or four of the toughest runners for you to bring down? The guys who were known for that. And in addition to the quarterback you're talking about now, who were a couple of others who were difficult to get, you know, to bring down or to cancel out anyway.
Yeah. My favorite runner would have to be Barry Sanders.
No.
And then it would be Thurman Thomas. I'm good as new.
Yeah.
I mean, so we're in the Super Bowl in Atlanta. Super Bowl, that was 28. So I finally got in the game, and I had like a kill shot on Thurman Thomas. I'm running across the middle, and, you know, like sometimes the hole opens up, it opens up for a second, and then the running back runs through it, and he sometimes doesn't see you because all the different blockers and all this other stuff, he doesn't see you. So as soon as he had that little daylight that came through, I hit him. And it was like, bam, right? So the next thing I know, I'm looking up at the ceiling. You know, and I'm looking at all the lights in the stadium, you know, and he's laying on top of me. I'm like, how the heck? You know, I mean, I made the tackle. But how did he tackle? Yeah, how did I get from, you know, being on top of him and running into him, and now I'm looking up at the sky? You know, so Thurman Thomas, those two, as far as fullbacks, it would be Floyd from the 49ers. He was really, really good, especially before he had his knee injury. I mean, he was like, the whole game, dude, don't you quit. I mean, like, you know, don't you take one playoff, you know, and he just came the whole game.
Oh, wow.
I liked him. Larry Sinners played very, very hard for the Cardinals. You know, Larry's crazy, something wrong with him, but he's a very good friend of me. You know what I'm saying? So, and then I would say quarterbacks, like I said, Brett Favre is my favorite. And you know, the thing I liked about Brett Favre is that he was a dog on the field. He was like a defensive guy, you know. He would get up and, you know, and then, you know, he would, you know, you would try to tackle him, or you would tackle one of his players or his running back, and then he'd get up and he'd start cussing you out. What kind of quarterback cusses guys out, especially defensive players? You know?
A guy by the name of Bobby Lane.
Oh, did he?
Back in the 50s.
Yeah, I was like, what kind of crazy guy is this? And then the other guy that I liked a lot was Steve Young, because he commanded his troops well. You know, Steve Young was a favorite. Those two guys are my favorite quarterbacks, you know, that I played against, you know, so I would say those are the two, you know, two groups of players. Did I answer everything?
Yeah,
that's good. Oh, okay. Hold on a second. I'm sorry.
Compare Montana and Steve Young.
I've never played against Montana, right? But they had the closing of Candlestick Park, and I was allowed to be on the defensive side of the game, and because you know they was like the closing Candlestick Park, so they had all their, you know, top players all playing. It was a flag football game.
I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. So I was lucky enough to be on the defensive side of like the Washington Generals of the. I was like on the NFL. I was a scrub team. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was a scrub team. So they brought us all these, you know, these guys in there. So we go in there, and Robert Griffin was, you know, like kept intercepting Steve Young, and like they were losing, you know, like they were losing, like literally losing. And then one of the guys that was putting a deal on said, "Hey, Robert Griffin, don't you know we're signing your check and you're supposed to lose this deal?" But we were out there like, "No, we ain't no scrubs." You know what I'm saying? I think what it is that, you know, the crowd was there and the whole thing, and we started getting back into it and started feeling the whole thing. But anyways, but so my point is this, that Montana was the quarterback and they were behind. Dude, he went and just marched down the field like he, I mean, I'd never seen
like
some.
We
weren't there. He was like, he commanded the field, and you could see how he brought everybody together. And he had that look on his face. He never smiles. He just looked very focused. Yeah, he could see everything around the whole daggone field. And like I said, know where to throw the ball to, who to throw it to. And that was really exciting to watch him do that. You know, so I would say, you know, that, and the difference between Montana and Steve Young, you know, Steve Young I played in actually like the championship games. You know, we lost that one under Switzer the first year, but, you know, but I think, and going to that championship game, I think that that was our 94 team. I would put that 94 team against any team ever in the NFL. And that was the year that we didn't win the Super Bowl. I almost think that was the best team that we really had. You know, if you go back and look at that 94 team, it was great. So, here you go.
Two questions. If you could have a playback to redo, which one would it be? And what is your most memorable moment as a player?
Okay, so is it a playback for me personally?
Yes.
Oh.
A play that if you could have it back to redo it.
Oh.
Oh wow. Thank
you very much. Let me see what I'm saying. I don't know about that one.
Hey, nice to talk to you.
Here we go.
Next question.
Here's some
sign. I'm about to come back down.
Memorable moment.
Oh, I guess the most memorable moment would be getting drafted. That was pretty cool. I was at home, you know, with my family, you know, just my siblings, and it was just us there, you know. And you know, Dallas had called us like in the first round, you know, and then I finally figured out why Dallas had me on the phone in the first round. So I don't know how old you guys are, but remember phones in people's houses, right? If somebody called you, what would happen? It would be busy.
No call waiting.
Yeah, no call waiting, right? So Jerry Jones had me on the phone for the entire first round so nobody else could call me. Yeah, he was sitting over there and he's like, "Hey, son, we're thinking about picking you up." And I'm like, "Dude, we'll go ahead and pick me." then he said, "Hold on a second, I'm gonna call you right back." Then he makes a trade with Detroit in like 13 seconds left, and then I go to the second round. So I could have been a first rounder for Dallas, but anyway. So I appreciate my path.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, everything that gets me to this point right here. So, what I'm saying, here you go.
Real quick, admire your body of work, man. Timothy Harrison, quick question. When you see the salaries that basketball players are getting now, do you think that football players will ever get that kind of money? You guys deserve it. You play a sport and it's such that, you know, you lay your bodies on the line every week. Will you ever see the kinds of salaries that basketball players are getting now?
I don't know, a loaf of bread was a nickel back in the 50s, right? I guess, you know, about, yeah, 2050 to get these guys in.
21 cents.
It was 20.
I
You know what I'm saying? So I think the guys are going to get the salaries, but if you look at the guys that are getting those salaries, there's only like maybe five guys on the whole team that's making that kind of money. Then everybody else is making like they're struggling. You know, so, yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, you only get paid during the season, and then, you know, you're going broke in the off season. You know, all your money is going toward all the bills that you could not be able to take care of and all stuff. Because in football, you know, like during the season, it's a pretty lengthy. It's a lot of time, you know. You're over there at 7:30, and you're not leaving till 6. And a lot of people don't understand that, you know. So, yeah. But I think the salaries will be there. Will they give them guaranteed contracts and all that and stuff? I don't understand. I don't think they're going to be able to do that, you know, other than the signing bonuses like that, because it's 53 guys on the team. You know, how are they going to be able to, you know, do all that kind of stuff? Yeah. So, here you go.
We've got time for this question and one more, and then Dixon has offered, he's brought some nice glossies and is happy to stay around for a few minutes and autograph pictures for folks if they would like.
Okay? All right. I have, as we're talking about salaries and so forth, well, let me ask two questions. Number one, who's responsible for getting the guys on and off the field? You know, you hear a call, too many players on the field, et cetera. And I think to myself, that's got to be crazy. How do you keep it? Or everybody's, you know, worked up, everybody's fired up, and everybody wants to get out there. Yeah. And you're trying to keep it all under control. You say, you stay, you go. How do you keep? And my second question is, with all the money running around, guys are coming out of school. Some guys have never had money in their lives. They get all this money, and they think it's going to be forever because they're young. Yeah. Is anybody helping players organize their finances if they want to take advantage of that opportunity to have somebody help them?
So about the players on the field, number one.
Okay, players on the field, number one. You've been taught that this is the offensive side on this side and this is the defensive side. So if you're not really playing, you're generally on your offensive bench or your defensive bench. So that kind of keeps a lot of things. There's no reason for you to be down on the offensive side of the bench because you're a defense guy. And if you're anywhere over that way, it's because you're about to line up to be able to potentially get into the game. And then, so if you're only like the first line of people at the game or near the sideline are generally people that are about to go into the game based on whatever the situation is going on. So if it's third down and long, they, you know, guys are already starting to line up for special teams because it's punt. You know, so they all start lined up near the special teams coach so that they can get out on the field. So everybody kind of knows whenever the change of possession is, they kind of start to group together. As a matter of fact, people on the bench will say, you know, it's third, you know, or so-and-so or whatever it is, for somebody that's sitting on the bench and they, you know, not concentrating on the game as much. So, yeah, and then what was the other question?
Players organized.
Well, see, the thing is that we always sit around and we think about this a little bit, you know, especially as we get older as players. The sport itself puts you in a competitive mindset against the people that you go out and compete against. You know, the guy next to me, you know, is my enemy. you know, so the guy that you're playing against is your enemy. So, you know, so there is a very little trust put into the guys. And who can you trust with what is valuable to you when you know the only reason why people are associated with you is because of your value? And then, you know, a lot of things, a lot of people don't understand it. You know, it's not necessarily the cash in your hand, but the association to you is basically equivalent to cash. Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, who's going to charge Tony Romo's wife to go into the restaurant? Yeah, charge her, you know. That's Tony Romo's wife, you know. So,
but I mean, it's just that you could get hurt at any minute.
Yeah.
And it's God.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, a lot of guys aren't making a ton of money. You know, as much as the big salaries that they show. And, you know, you know, guys, these guys are getting paid W-2 wages. If you get paid $1 million, you know.
Spend
a million. Yeah, no. Well, if you get paid $1 million, you know that Yeah, Uncle Sam's going to take, you know, his portion. So that means you're going to end up with, let me, $650 of it. Not saying that's not a lot of money. I'm just using it as a round number.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you say your agent got to pay 33% right. to your agent, so that's $30,000 there.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know what I'm saying? It's a lot of things start to tick away. And then because the way that the job is structured, it takes a lot of expenses in order for you to live like that and be able to handle that job. You're never there to be able to take care of anything that has to do with your home. No. You know, so you have to pay somebody to be able to manage that, you know, and all these other different things. There's a lot of expenses that it takes in order for them to be a full-time person and be able to take care of that stuff as much as possible.
Yeah.
So those are some of the big expenses as it relates to it.
Sure.
But I don't know, it's just not as much money as people think, and there's only a few people that are making that kind of money to be able to you know, to... But there are people that help people with, you know, taking care of their finances. Some things that I don't think that they don't echo enough into these guys' heads is that, you know, that they should never ever put a dollar in something that they don't fully understand.
Right.
You know,
right.
And even if you give your dollar to a bank, it's no longer your dollar.
That's right.
It's the bank's dollar. And if you want to get that money back from that bank, they're going to have to sue them. Because you gave it to them. And a lot of people don't really realize that, you know, that is no longer your money once you give it to the bank. And they just don't teach the guys a lot of stuff about finances. Because, you know, like you say, it's new money. You know what I'm saying? It's new money, you know, and very, very rarely do guys come from, you know,
rich
trust, yeah, trust funds. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know.
I know.
All right, one more question. Who's got the last question?
I've got it right here.
Why don't we get you? I know.
I'll be quick. My uncle played 10 years for the Yankees.
Yeah.
One of the things he told me is that the old players would advise the younger players on how to deal with these financial ups and downs.
Yes.
Same in pro football?
No. You don't trust that guy, you know? He was trying to take my job.
Here you go.
Thank you.
How do you think the awareness of concussions will affect the NFL?
Hold on a second. What do you mean? What?
About the recent awareness of concussions, how seriously they're taking concussions. Like the 49ers, a couple of their players recently retired after 1 year due to the fear of getting more concussions.
In other words, it's changing the NFL.
What's the rules? The new
rules. I'm not exactly sure how the whole concussion deal in the lawsuit. And it seems to me it may be another cause for people to be able to make money. I'm just being real. It just sounds like it to me, you know. And I mean, you know, if you knowingly know that this career is this and what are the consequences of it, you know, you already understand it. You know, of course you don't want to get hurt or anything like that. And but, you know, when people say that they're quitting, you know, you need to follow the trail if there's going to be any money exchanged in their decisions. So I think, and like I said before, I think that if you take steps to be able to make sure that things don't happen, like reducing the equipment and teaching technique and, you know, no, don't change the rules and all that kind of stuff and let it be what it is, you know, I think that would be more helpful to the concussion side of the football to me.
Leather helmets.
Yeah, leather helmets.
All right, well, I want to say a special thank you to Dixon Whipler. I want to say hip hip.
Hooray!
Hip hip.
Hooray!
Hip hip.
Hooray!
All right, anyone who would like an autograph, come up front, and thank you for coming to the Sports Fitter at Glenn's.
I'll come to you.
Oh, he'll come to you. Raise your hand, he'll come to you.
Yeah, you raise your hand.
Raise your hand, he'll come to you.
Okay.
All right, thanks everybody.